Well, did you hear that the Ten Commandments are going to be reduced to the Six Commandments? Federal judge, I forget where, I was deciding a case of whether or not the Ten Commandments should be allowed to be posted in a government building. And presently they are posted in the building, and he's deciding whether that's appropriate or not. And he decided that, well, because of separation of church and state and so forth, that it certainly is not appropriate for a government building to be the site where a religious document is posted. And so, but he decided that actually the Ten Commandments, actually the first four are the only ones that really say anything about God, and that the last six actually address man's relationship to man. And so he decided that you could reduce it to six commands and post those. Fortunately, among those six, there is the one that speaks to our relationship within our families, and God had decreed that we should honor our father and mother. And so this morning we're going to try to honor our mothers. Probably one of the most, if not the most, tender implementations of this honoring of one's mother is recorded in the book of John in the 19th chapter, verse 25 through 27. We see that where Jesus, in the midst of the most agonizing and painful times of his life, still took time to think about his mother and to provide for his mother. And so we see that as John records how Mary was present there nearby at the cross, there was also John, who was, or as he's described here, the disciple whom Jesus loved. He was present as well, and Jesus, looking at them, he says to Mary, his mother, "Behold your son," not meaning himself, but rather meaning John, who was standing nearby. And then he said to John, "Behold your mother," and then John records that from that day forward, she was in the home of John, and she was cared for by John. It's a tender provision being made by Jesus, by the eldest son of the family, to care for his mother, and to see that she was provided for in life. Some would ask, well, what about Jesus's, you know, brothers and sisters? And we just really don't know what the circumstances were with them. Certainly we know that that Jesus's brothers were alive at this time, and that they actually did live for many years after. But I would remind you that in that text where Jesus talked about his poverty in his life, when he said that the foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests to live in, but the Son of Man doesn't have any place to lay his head. He was describing his poverty. I would suggest to you he was also describing their poverty. He was describing the condition of his family. And it may very well be that Jesus was simply, as the older brother, was simply recognizing that his brothers and sisters were not going to be able to provide for their mother. And that John, a very trusted, a much trusted friend, and a man who was by all indications in the scriptures, quite a successful businessman with James's brother and Zebedee's father. They had what appears to have been quite successful of a fishing business before becoming disciples of the Lord and apostles of the Lord. So that John was apparently in a position where he could help, he could provide for Mary, and Jesus made this request of him. As I say, it's a tender provision. It's a tender moment in the life of Jesus. And probably is a good indicator of just exactly what the relationship between Jesus and his mother was like throughout their life. Luke chapter 2, verse 52, describes the growth of Jesus as a child and how he matured and he progressed in his development. And I think that's probably also an indicator of how he related to both of his parents, but and certainly his mother, as Joseph is really not mentioned any, probably because of or possibly because of death. But nonetheless, there is, I think, some indicators of how the relationship between Jesus and Mary developed in the course of time. And I think he provides an example to us of how we can be the child of a happy mother. And I suspect that would be the desire of most, if not all, who are gathered here today, and particularly today, as we reflect upon our mothers and our relationships with our mothers. I would think that most would want their mothers to be happy, and that they would want the relationship that they have with their mothers to be the basis upon which their mother's happiness is established. I want to suggest to you three things that we can do in order to make this possible, in order to make it so that we are the child of a happy mother. First thing that I want to suggest to you is that what this is going to require is that you obey your mother. That you obey your mother when you are young. And of course, the scriptures speak in general about the relationship of the child to the parent. Colossians chapter 3 and in verse 20. The Apostle Paul says, "Children, be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord." There are a lot of reasons. There are a lot of good reasons that when you're young, you need to be obedient to your mother. One overarching reason is because of what Paul says here in verse 20 of Colossians chapter 3, that this is well-pleasing to the Lord. It not only makes your mother happy to have a child who is obedient to her and wants to see her happy and demonstrates that by their willingness to obey, it also makes the Lord happy. And you just stop and think for a few moments about the number of things in scriptures where the specific statement is made that something is well-pleasing to the Lord. Something makes the Lord happy to see. There are not a lot of such statements. One of them is this, that your relationship to your parents, and today we're talking specifically about our relationship to our mothers, that your relationship to your mother is a basis upon which the Lord is pleased or not pleased with you and with your life. There are, I think, some real temptations for particularly young men, teenagers. It seems to me that there are some real temptations. When one reaches that point in life, to begin to think of oneself as being independent and no longer responsible to having to do what my mother says, all of that's just foolish. All of that's just not true. I don't want to be insensitive about things. But when you get to be a teenager, you're still a child. I'm sorry if it offends you, but you're still a child. And as such, you are still subject to your parents. And if you've adopted the idea that, well, now I'm, 16 or whatever, and I don't have to do what my mom says anymore. I'm a man, and what the Bible says about the woman is supposed to be subject to the man. And I'm not making this up. I've talked with teenagers in the past, teenage boys in the past, who were expressing these very ideas, and you just need to set those ideas aside, because they are neither factual nor are they biblical. You're still a child, and you have responsibilities to your mother, to obey her. You have responsibilities to honor her. Some of which are never going to end, but certainly by the time you reach teenage years, they have not ended. So I would suggest to you, if you really want to be the child of a mother who's happy, then what you need to do is you need to obey her. When you're young, you need to make sure that you're doing what she tells you to do, because she's got the right to tell you to do those things, and you have the responsibility to submit to them. But now I want to suggest to you a second thing that you will need to do if you want to be the child of a happy mother, and that is you need to take care of your mother when she's old. You need to obey her when you're young, and you need to take care of her when she's old. In many ways, Jesus was doing just that in the text that we looked at in John chapter 19. They had not reached the point in life where either of them could have been considered old. They were not going to reach that point in life. He was not caring for a mother who was presently old. What he was doing was providing for a mother who would one day be old. And he was making sure that she would be cared for. And the scriptures have some pretty specific instructions for us. 1 Timothy chapter 5. We'll look at a couple of verses here in just a moment that speak to the responsibility that we have in this regard. But some of you may be thinking, well, you know, David, I know the Bible says those things, but you know, I mean, what responsibilities will I have to provide for my mother? She'll have Social Security. Very likely so, yes. Very likely she will. But of course, there have only been a few, relatively speaking, there have only been a few nations where that kind of societal provision has been made for the care of the elderly of that society. You realize, I hope, that most people who have lived have not lived with that kind of what we sometimes refer to as a social safety net, where there's been some kind of provisions made within the society, where funds are set aside and are going to be going to be available when one gets to old age and needs that kind of provision. There just haven't been very many nations and cultures where that has taken place. In most instances, like the time that we're reading about of the times of Jesus, in most instances, people are left to provide for themselves. Families are left to provide for themselves. And indeed, the scriptures speak to that familial responsibility that exists in this regard. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and in verse 8, he says, if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Now, as I said, I think it's likely true that for your mother, when she gets to the age of being able to draw Social Security, that it'll probably be there for her to draw. And it may very well be that that's sufficient to provide for her, and that you won't have to make any financial arrangements for her care. But let me tell you that what the Bible says is, if you're unwilling to do that, if the circumstances should be such that she does need provision in her old age, if you're unwilling to do that, what the Bible says is that you're worse than an unbeliever. That your responsibility is, as you look in verse 4 of 1 Timothy 5, if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to practice piety in regard to their own family and to make some return to their parents, for this is acceptable in the sight of God. There's that idea again of something that's acceptable in God's eyes, or something that pleases Him when He sees it. What is He pleased with? What is acceptable in His eyes? The Apostle Paul says it is for a child to provide for one's parents in their old age. If you want to be the child of a happy mother, then you need to be a child who is willing to provide for that mother in her old age. Some might say, well, okay, David, you know, Social Security isn't enough, or Social Security folds and it's not there when my mother needs it. But there's always the church. Well, you know, that's exactly what Paul is addressing in this text in 1 Timothy chapter 5. And that's true. There is the church. And there is a responsibility that the church has to provide for its needy. But what Paul is addressing in this text is the realization that there is a family responsibility first. And that your obligation to your mother is to care for her and to do so that the church is not burdened. In fact, Paul goes on to write in verse 5 about she who is a widow indeed and who has been left alone, has fixed her hope on God and continues entreaties and prayers night and day. He talks about those who are widows indeed, meaning those who are truly left to themselves and by themselves. If you're the son of a mother, she's not a widow indeed. If you're the daughter of a mother, she's not a widow indeed. She's not been left desolate. She's not been left alone, totally alone, by herself. She has you. And she has every right to expect that you will provide for her, that you will care for her. And she'll be happy if you're a son or a daughter who will do just exactly that. I can't imagine the heartache, the disappointment that would be hers to find out when she gets to her old age and she needs some kind of provisions that she can't count on it coming from you. Be very difficult for a person in that circumstance to be a happy mother. But if you want to be the child of a happy mother, then you need to obey her when you're young, and you need to provide for her when she's old, to care for her when she's old. The Apostle Paul wrote, as we read a moment ago, that this is making a return to your parents, and that this pleases God, or that this is acceptable to God. Now, you may say, you know, David, what you're describing here is just going to be a colossal inconvenience. And I suspect that may be very well be true. It'll be a difficult thing, a challenge, to provide for a parent in their old age. Financially, it'll work a hardship on you, no doubt. Yeah, I suspect it will be a colossal inconvenience. But so was caring for you. So was providing for you. And that's exactly what the Apostle Paul is saying in this text, that this is making a payment, if you will. It is making a return to one's parents for what they did when we couldn't provide for ourselves. And now the tables are turned. And because of old age, she's not able to do for herself, provide for herself. And it is right that you be expected to do so. It'll make her happy. And let me ask you this. While when you're young, you may not appreciate your ability to make your mother happy by obeying her, Let me ask you this. When she's old and she needs help, don't you appreciate the fact that to receive it from you is going to make her happy? Can't you understand that? We may not be able to understand that when we're young, and that our obedience makes her happy. We may not have the capacity to appreciate that. But let me tell you, when she's old and we're older, we do have the capacity to understand that. Do you want your mother to be happy in her old age? Then you take care of her. And the third thing I would suggest to you is that we need to honor our mother at all times. I said to you a few moments ago that there were some things that don't come to an end. We don't outgrow the responsibility and the obligations that we have to show respect to our parents. Leviticus, the 19th chapter, and the 3rd verse, we find where God, speaking through Moses, says, "Every one of you shall reverence his mother and his father, and you shall keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God." Every one of you will reverence, you'll respect your mother and your father. You do this in a variety of ways. Obviously, you do it by obeying them when you're young and by caring for them when they're old. You do it by expressing to them your gratefulness. You do it by being willing to listen to their counsel and to their advice. "Well, but I'm a grown-up." Yeah, that's right, you are. And you'll make your decisions. You'll make the choices that you want to. But you owe them a willingness to listen to what they have to say. Then you make the decisions that you want to make. And you'll be responsible for that, those decisions and those consequences. But what you are not free to do is to be dismissive and disrespectful. Ever. If you want your mother to be happy, particularly in those last years, if you want your mother to be happy, then you be a son or a daughter who is always respectful and who will listen and who will consider their counsel. You honor your mother at all times throughout life. And that'll go a long way towards making her happy. She spent a long time doing things for you, doing things that would make your life easier, doing things that would make you happy. She spent a long time doing that. You do the same.